Well, hello everyone. I'm here with co-author for Predictable Prospecting, Jeremy Donovan. And I asked him to have a call with me because I wanted you guys to get a feel for the why behind this wonderful book. So I've asked Jeremy to join us, and I have a starter question, I guess, Jeremy, for you. And that is, if you go back in time and think about what trigger, what event that prompted you to pursue not only the topic further, but the pursue writing this book with me. Can you take us back to what your thought process was and you know, what that event was that caused you to say, you know, this is really a great topic that should be in a book?
Yeah. So thanks for having me on. I think also it will be fun actually to recollect and reminisce about how all this got started. I think I'll probably wind the clock back even further, which is why do I write books to begin with, especially since I have a day job that I quite enjoy. Mm-hmm. And the reason I write fundamentally is about learning. I write to learn. So although I read tons and tons and tons of books in a given space whenever I'm, let's say, transitioning into a new role at work or taking on some kind of new project that's foreign to me, I'll tend to read 8 to 10 books on a subject until things start to get repetitious for me. Mm-hmm. There are certain things where I feel like there's something that wasn't said or I don't understand it well enough, so then I get motivated to write. So the motivation here was, throughout the course of my career, I've been fortunate to keep reinventing myself. You know, some people like to do one thing for a very, very long time. I mean, I would take my father-in-law as a great example of that. For 40 years, he designed cooling systems for a variety of different types of power plants, and he's, you know, probably one of the best people in the world at doing that. Mm-hmm. That's not how I'm wired. I'm wired to want to switch radically every couple of years and do, you know, and it's an evolution. I wouldn't say I'm making huge leaps. There's a path to it, but making some kind of evolution. So for me, I began to evolve originally from an engineer to an industry analyst to a product development and management person, then to a marketing person, and then ultimately to a sales operations and strategy professional. So in each of those major transitions, I really needed to learn a new domain. And in this particular case, you know, I knew enough to know that I didn't know as much about sales as I wish I did, in particular B2B sales. So, you know, I read every book under the sun. There are some amazing books that have been out forever, like Spin Selling is definitely well regarded as a classic in the area, and I think still every bit as valid today as it was when it was written 20 or 30 years ago. And then there's lots and lots of new books, like Trish Bertuzzi's book, the Sales Development Playbook, the Cracking the Sales Management Code. There's all kinds of new books that are constantly being created. But when I read through the stuff that was out there, including, you know, I landed on the book that you wrote with Aaron Ross, Predictable Revenue. And, you know, like many people who happened upon that book, I thought, wow, this is something that's actually really, really different than what's out there. And what I liked about it, and it really fits with my style of writing, but what I liked about it was it was very practical, right? It wasn't theoretical. It was clear that, you know, both you and Aaron kind of had boots on the ground, and, you know, were not only helping salespeople sell, but you were also selling to build your own businesses, so that you both were experienced sales professionals. And that was an important piece for me, because I think sometimes people get so bogged down in sort of the consulting world that they forget a little bit of what it's like to be boots on the ground. And I felt like, wow, what I'm reading in that book really resonated with what I was experiencing in the organization I was working at when I read that particular book. So I'll pause there for a second. Does that, I would assume that would kind of resonate with what's in your head. I know from talking to you, and I guess we'll get deeper into the story, but you also kind of had a, I want to write a book one day interest in you.
Yes. I was actually asked by a number of people who I was had the good fortune of servicing after we wrote Predictable Revenue, they saw the differences in what they read in the book to what I was teaching to assemble, activate, and then optimize their top of funnel frameworks. So, you know, there was always this hint of, you know, it'd be nice if you can get this down in some type of coursework or some type of manuscript or how-to guide, because what we read in this book is a foundation of what you're teaching us. So it wasn't unusual. I had heard it, but as you know, writing books can be a daunting process. And, you know, there's always this fear that you forgot something majorly important that some critical key element that they need. But, you know, it, gone are the days of when you publish, pretty much got it, when you get it out there, it's out there. Now we can add supplements to it. And that's what we're doing with this piece, is giving our viewers, our readers, our fans an inside kind of look as to how we came together to do this and the why behind it. So
I agree with you,
by the way, that spin selling for me was the book that I used, because I'm also an engineer. And I had this feeling that I wasn't really a salesperson per se. I was more of a consultant or consultative type of person trying to solve problems. And spin selling was just a godsend to me to be able to formulate my process ideas and my systems know-how into conversation that led people down a path where they were excited about doing business with us.
Yeah. I mean, with spin selling, by the way, I will say that there's almost nothing in any book that's come in the years subsequent that isn't covered, at least at some level of depth, by spin selling. So it's all sort of in there. And then, you know, people might brand things around, they're maybe rebrand things that are in there and variations on the theme. I mean, of course, there's additive stuff, and we've definitely tried to be additive with our book. Mm-hmm. But, you know, at the end of the day, sales is a pretty fundamental thing that although the techniques change, the ultimate purpose, which is, you know, supplying an individual or a company with a product or service that they find value in, that they get a return on investment in, that fundamental thing does not change. So therefore, and since human beings don't change that much, human psychology doesn't change that much, there should be a similar foundation. I'm not surprised by that. But yeah, so I mean, getting back to our story, my recollection was I was in a new role, and I was, joined an organization that, you know, what really needed to enhance its sales culture. And after reading Predictable Revenue, I think I called or emailed or LinkedIn connected, I can't even remember, both you and Aaron, to see if, you know, one or the both of you actually did, you know, training and consulting work. You replied quickly. You know, I vetted you by, I'm sure, the way I vet all partners, which is to, you know, have a phone call, understand what your methodology is, what your approach is, to see if I would judge you to be a good facilitator for a training session. Mm-hmm. And then I hired you, and we met up in Boston, I believe.
We did what I call an immersion program, which is when we sit down together for hours on end and work through step by step the blocks in the new framework that the book is written against.
Yeah, and what you may not know, I can't remember if I told you this or not, but we actually hired a second person, and we booked this one hotel conference room, and I can't remember if you were first or he was second, but we did like 2 or 3 days with you, and then we did another 2 days with, or vice versa, we did this 2 days with the other person, mm-hmm. and you know, at the end of the session that you ran, I was just totally blown away. I mean, especially the other person was good, but you were, not to make you blush too much, but you were great. So at the end of the session, I thought, wow, yeah, there's definitely stuff that you know that is not in any book I've read, you know, and wasn't even in Predictable Revenue. So I think I walked up to you and I said, hey, you know, you should really write a book. even whether I had anything to do with it or not, I just thought you've got something special here that I haven't read before. I think that was, I do that a lot, by the way, when I'm really impressed with people. So I think that's probably what I said to you.
It was very much along those lines. And in the, when I laid out the framework on the board and we worked through the critical path elements, I remember you shaking your head towards the end saying, I've never learned like this before in this manner. And then you said, you know, you really ought to be putting this into a book. So yeah. It was more of being my mentor saying, okay, the next step now, Mary Lou, is to take this and to put it into a book so that you can share it with the world.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm glad eventually we sort of connected to do it mm-hmm. together, because selfishly, right, writing the book in a way was a half a year of free consulting, picking your brain, so I could get smarter. But I hope in exchange, what was great about the partnership was, you know, you had ideas, more ideas than me. I had some ideas, and then I was able to actually take those and put them into practice in an operating environment in real time. Mm-hmm. And as we were writing the book, I could say, hey, you know what, like that didn't really work. So, or that really did work. So here's an example, right. You know, and I know Aaron and you freely talk about this, which is, you know, back when Predictable Revenue was written, the sort of, I'll call it mass customized, or it's not even customized, mass personalized email, like, hi, Mary Lou, blah, 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 insert company name, insert dynamic field X, right? Those fully templated emails, which were talked about a little bit and were adopted widely by a lot of tech companies, particularly mm-hmm. SaaS cloud-based software companies, that worked a long time ago, but it just has stopped working. I mean, I'm a buyer, and as a buyer, whenever I see an email like that, I just press delete. So what we started testing out was, we started testing out, okay, well, what happens if you slow down, right? So don't send 100 or 150 emails a day. Slow down, send 40 to 60 maybe a day. And for every one of those 40 to 60, spend 5 minutes or so, 10 minutes, whatever it happens to be, really taking the time to personalize the email. Read that person's LinkedIn profile, get some preferably professional but maybe personal tidbit out of it that you can reference, or go through the company's 10K, 10Q, Investor Day presentations, whatever it happens to be, so that your email is just contextually spot on. And that might just be the subject line and maybe the first sentence mm-hmm. and very, very much optionally the last sentence. And I mean, I'll tell you, when we switched over from generic templates to a degree of personalization, right? We're still using a template, but we customize the subject line, we customize the first line. That switch over had a dramatic impact on our ability to convert into meetings. I'll add one more thing. I'll take a pause, which is, you know, the other thing is just a concept that you really opened my eyes to, which is, so many people just, they think they can do it all via email. And, you know, you really opened my eyes to the necessity of doing a multi-channel approach. So we modify it, but we ultimately settled on doing just three email touches, because if you hit someone with email more than three times, you're going to drive them bonkers. Mm-hmm. We do one in the beginning, one in the middle, and one in the end. The beginning is a typical intro email. The middle one is, you know, sort of a follow-up. Did you get a chance to check this out? And then the third one is a little bit more in the breakup email vein, which has been successful, but eventually people are going to get wise to that one too. So we'll have to change as tastes change. But then we call, you know, at least five times with the premise that you have about a 20% chance of connecting on any given call. So if you want to get a call, you got to call five times. Mm-hmm. So like that actually also was really a breakthrough to move from email only to that sort of mixed phone and email at a regular cadence. The combination of those two things, I think, is a massive business accelerator.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's really funny that you say that about hundreds of emails with automation, you know, scaling it down to something more meaningful and that you can really take time. The original book, Predictable Revenue, when it was published, recommended somewhere between 25 and 50 emails per SDR to be sent out, but it was pre all this automation that allowed you to just mass send. So if we're going back to that gentler, kinder, being more respectful, more authentic, researching up front, like you said, 1 to 5 minutes, somewhere in that time frame, and then provide the SDR with a template that covers the sales conversation. Because a lot of times, if you ask an SDR or a sales representative to do a one-off email, they may forget or may not understand the components of what goes into an email to make it impactful so that people will act. So what we do is we write that hard part, so to speak, where we're, you know, triggering an event, we're looking at an obstacle, we're connecting it to a potential outcome or result that the client can get. We provide specificity and proof, and then we share the opportunity that's ahead of them if they take this action. Those components are pre-written in template format, but we tie it all together with personalization. And that's what you're doing at your company now.
Yeah, exactly. And it really has been, you know, it has been so effective. And you know, I have the luxury of being able to listen to, you know, calls mm-hmm. that are going on. I have the luxury of being able to audit emails that get sent out, and definitely our most successful SDRs are the ones who are taking the time to do that pre-call research, mm-hmm. are taking the time to truly personalize emails that the person, you're communicating with a human being. I would also add that personalization is so critical because in the company I work for currently, we target generally quite large enterprises, Fortune 1000, Global 2000 kinds of companies and large financial services companies. And there, you know, if you burn a senior level contact with a crappy outreach, you're dead, right? I mean, you kill the company in the process. So I think if you're targeting, and this is a point I think you made to me, which is, you know, you vary the degree of personalization based on how critical any email is to you. So if you're targeting, you know, if you're Yelp and you're targeting mom and pop small businesses, then, you know, you probably can't afford to take the time to do that kind of pre-call research, and you're just going to be smiling and dialing. I will say taking the time to do less dials per day, potentially with or without automation. I mean, we use a decent amount of automation as well, but also has a positive impact on the longevity and quality and productivity of the people that you hire, right? I mean, these SDRs are human beings just like, you know, just like everybody else, and they deserve mm-hmm. to be treated with dignity and respect. And if you try to get them to do over 100 calls a day, you're just burning this person out. So, you know, one of the things I'm proud of in having our folks, you know, do less calls is it gives us a lot of time to spend to train them. You know, I've been told that our training program is pretty unique, and I know from the people we've hired who went through SDR programs elsewhere, they just got handed a computer and a headset and told to start smiling and dialing with limited training. You know, we actually, with our SDRs, we role play every single day, mm-hmm. which I think is ultimately the best way to train people to be successful and listen to calls every single day.
That's a key takeaway, I think, that we really focused on in our book was this concept of role-playing. And like you said, role-playing every day. And the way that I've seen it done, where it's just a natural part of the rhythm, is that we advocate block time, or people call it time blocking. There's different terms for it. But uninterrupted telephone time, because data has shown that the more we're on the phone contiguously throughout time, the better we get in our conversation. So if we warm up those conversations by role-playing, by the time we actually hit the phones and get ready to start conversing with people, we're ready to go. We're warmed up. We pick a topic. It may be objection handling one day. It may be how to speak with the gatekeeper the next day, or whatever the topic is. The SDRs can raise topics that they want to drill down on. The point is, it takes 15 to 20 minutes, 20 to 30 minutes, somewhere in that range, every day to role play. And if I were to shake somebody at 3 o'clock in the morning and say, you know, some objection, it'll be natural to them to come back with not only an answer to the objection, but a follow-on question. That's where the spin selling comes in. A follow-on question that will allow the client to start thinking, wow, I never thought of it that way. Or, gee, yeah, okay, let's talk about that. So role-playing is a big, big deal. And I'm glad to hear that you're doing it the way you're doing it, because that's spot on.
Yeah, and we try, you know, I try to play, you know, not just the, it's easy as a manager to just play the client, because that's the easy role, and
right,
not to play the salesperson. And you need real credibility, that you need to be willing in those situations to get uncomfortable too. And, you know, even if you screw up as a manager in a role play, in some ways your people respect you even more. Mm-hmm. Because they know you're not on the phone every day, right? I mean, they know it's been some time since you had to do that personally, right. but they definitely respect that you're trying. And you know, we try to keep fresh by having managers, you know, do their own cold prospecting every once in a while, just to maintain, you know, just to maintain the rhythm. You know, you said all these things are in the book, but you just mentioned something else that I think was another really breakthrough concept that that you helped reinforce for me as we worked through the book, which was this concept of time blocking. Mm-hmm. You know, if I had to point to a single factor that probably is the one of the key make or breaks in success, it is time blocking. And in the end, you know, talking in the abstract about it and trying to think in the abstract about it was one thing, but once we actually like stared at the calendar and tried to figure out, okay, what are the exact time blocks and how do we do this, and what do we do, what we landed on and what I've implemented is 4 90-minute time blocks per day. So that's going to take up 6 hours total. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you need those other times for people to be human, obviously, and for lunch and for the occasional meeting and so on. But we really hold those 4 time blocks to be very, very sacred. We don't cancel them. Mm-hmm. We don't book meetings on top of them. And, you know, we try to give our philosophy, at least my philosophy, is to try to give our SDRs, who are sales professionals, right?
Yeah, they are.
A lot of control and autonomy. So we just, our metric is 20 meetings set per month. So mm-hmm. It averages one a day. It's not a huge number, but, you know, believe you me, it's work to get a meeting, like a high level qualified meeting per day. That is work.
It is. And I think, you know, like a lot of this position, the block time can be used for telephone work. It could also be, I have one client who's actually using 15 to 20 minutes of that time to start teaching how to write a good email and the concepts of writing a good email. So everyone sits down and writes an email, then they share as a group, then they put the quote unquote winner, or the ones that they think will do well, actually into the sequence for testing purposes.
Yep.
'Cause, you know, as we said in the book, it's assembling the network, it's activating it, and then optimizing. So you're always iterating, you're always changing, you're always making it better. And that's what allows us to do this predictable prospecting technique, is that we're continually looking and not satisfied with the results that we're getting, so that we can improve.
Yeah, I think, I mean, to your point, there is no silver, I'll add to your point, I guess, which is there is no silver bullet, right? There is no perfect subject line. There is no perfect email. And even if you find something that's perfect, the rest of the sales development community jumps on that so fast that the approach gets burned out. And at the end of the day, that's why I think the thing that matters the most is the personalization, because that's the one thing that cannot be. A lot of people will claim they can automate true personalization, but I think that still requires a human being to really think through and synthesize the information. You know, maybe I'll eat my words one day when when artificial intelligence technologies reach the point where they truly seem human, or more human than they seem right now. But I think for now, that personalization, by the human being, is incredibly important.
And like you said, there is a spot in the sales pipeline that personalization is a must. And, you know, it's when you've begun the dialogue, you've confirmed it's the right person, and now you are starting that sales conversation. As soon as you start the sales conversation and you're trying to understand what challenges they have, the needs that they have at this time, and, you know, where they fit in the spectrum of offers that you offer, that's the way you develop a relationship. That builds trust, that builds rapport, you know. But then when it moves, like the exit off the freeway, and it moves to nurture sequencing, at least now you have those conversational elements, so you know, and you should be tracking what conversation led up to the point where you understood their pain, and then you send them off into long-term follow-up or nurture with the track that resonates with them. So you have a lot more intelligence, and you can use data that way. When you're actually working in the active sales conversation, it's proven over and over again that your conversion rates are going to be higher the more you personalize, which means you're working less records. I mean, let's look at the math behind it. You know, you're definitely working less records, and they're more quality. And that's the point of this whole thing, is to send quality down the pipeline so that the clients that you close bring in the highest revenue potential, and they're the highest likelihood of closing. That's what's going to build revenue for the company.
Yeah, I totally agree. I also wanted to circle back around to the training comment that you made on sitting down and crafting emails together. That's a technique that I love. We definitely use that. I was down a couple months ago at the conference for Sales Loft. Sales Loft is a tool.
Kyle Porter's company.
Kyle Porter's company. Yep, it's actually my favorite tool for sales development, because it allows you to do that personalization. But I was down at that conference, and I heard a great tip, which we've implemented, which is keep or kill. So whenever one of us gets a cold prospecting email or a prospecting email, we send it around to our business development or our sales development team, and we all comment keep or kill. And we've actually don't just say keep or kill with one word. What we tend to do is we frame the feedback as build on or think about. So the build ons are, here's the stuff that actually was solid. Like, every email probably has something good about it, hopefully. Mm-hmm. And then the think abouts are the things that didn't go well. So, you know, when the subject line grabs you, right, in a relevant and non-salesy way, when there's personalization, when they took time to show you that they knew you, then when it was shorter rather than longer, when it looked like it was, you know, plain text, normal, that some human being would type, rather than, you know, HTML, fancy HTML with underlines and bolds and all kinds of ridiculous stuff. So, we go through all those and just figure out. And then even different techniques. One, I think, I'm pretty sure, I think we'll put this in the book as well. One great technique that came to me someone used on me, I should say, while we were in the course of writing the book, was they sent an email. They wanted to get to me. This is an interesting technique. Okay. So they wanted to get to me, to sell their product. But what they did instead was they went to somebody else in the organization at my level and sent them, you know, the first step email, and this other person ignored the first email. And then the second email they sent, the subject line said, "Should I be talking to Jeremy Donovan? ? And sure enough, they instantly forwarded it to me. I was just a brilliant technique.
Brilliant.
I've actually seen, that one still works, at least as the time that we're talking right now.
Today, 2016, May.
Yes, exactly. But I have started to see that same technique being used by other folks. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely starting to flow through the sales development community, and eventually it will burn itself off also, but
you design that in chapter 2 of the book when you talk about the bullseye for the buyer profiles, the indirect and direct influencers. So if you're doing your research, you're going to have the names of the indirect and direct influencers of your potential buyer. So, I mean, you essentially outlined that framework to do this type of email in chapter 2.
Yep. That's exactly right. And it takes patience to use that approach, right? Because SDRs are so hungry to get a meeting with the person, right? With the decision maker right out of the bat that they think that's the most efficient thing. But this was a good example where I probably wouldn't have responded or taken a look at that had it not come from another person. And by the way, one of the most effective ways to do that, getting at the bullseye, is you might actually send that email one level higher, right? So send it to my boss first, and if my boss ignores it the first time, when they get it the second time, when it says, should I talk to Jeremy Donovan, then, you can be pretty sure that my boss will forward it to me.
Yes.
And just because it came from my boss, I'm going to read it, right?
Of course, the psychology behind that, yes. Yeah. So, Jeremy, tell us what's next for you. How many books have you written? Share with the audience.
I write them to learn, but I think this is probably book number 6.
My goodness. Yeah.
What's next for me is, I don't really have a quota for writing, and writing is painful. I mean, it really, any writer who tells you it does have moments of fun and flow and joy, mm-hmm. but I would say those are in between lots and lots of moments of frustration and pain. I'll write again. Right now I'm just focusing, more on my family, focusing on work. So when mm-hmm. the muse hits me again, I'll do something. I have been really fascinated lately by academic studies around what leads to performance at work, sales performance or other performance. So that might be the next, that might be the next area. There, mm-hmm. there's lots and lots of books out there that aren't really academically grounded. They're very opinion based.
Yes.
And yet there's an incredible amount of academic research that shows what really matters. So I'd like to pour through that and popularize that. And also, again, it's about understanding. I want to understand for me, and for the people I work with, what's going to make people help people be successful and happy, right? So that's an area that I'm fascinated by.
So in closing, I know you've got a lot of different hats that you wear, but if people wanted to reach out to you and talk to you more about some of the things that you're doing at your current in your current work environment, how would they do that?
Yeah, so I guess two great ways. I'm super active on LinkedIn, so you can always message me via LinkedIn. Based on this conversation, obviously a super authentic message, not just, please connect with me on LinkedIn and try to sell me something immediately.
Indeed.
Show me that you know me. So LinkedIn's great, or they can go to speakingsherpa.com. Just like you would think, speaking, and then Sherpa, like a guide, S-H-E-R-P-A. Mm-hmm. And there's a contact form there, and I do respond to emails that I get there as well.
Okay. And then, of course, everyone, he will be at the ready when the book is launching, this is being recorded prior to the book launch, and we're going to be putting this out as a takeaway for people who pre-order the book. So if you are thinking or on the fence about pre-ordering the book, we're going to be putting a lot of different worksheets and intelligent guides and things like that for you to follow along, because the book's got so much in it that there's a lot to learn. In fact, my team went through and pulled out, Jeremy, a lot of the different learnings page by page, and we thought, there may be 50 that we can look at and maybe build content for. There were over 100 that they pulled out of the book. And the book's only, 200 pages or 200 something? Yeah. So there's a lot of good stuff in there, and I do really appreciate and enjoy tremendously working with you on this project.
It's been a blast. It's hard to write, it's hard to write with other people, and it was a pleasure all the way through. I both enjoyed getting to know you and enjoyed learning from you.
Very good. Well, thank you so much for your time, Jeremy. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Take care.
Okay.